we're looking at the role of community pharmacies that have been on the front lines of this pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, glad you could be here. According to the National Community Pharmacists Association, local pharmacies have administered tens of millions of doses of vaccines, and in many cases, in communities without another readily accessible healthcare provider. Have you relied on a trusted pharmacist? Do you prefer an independent community pharmacy over larger retail ones? Join in 800-642-1234. Hashim Zabek is a pharmacist and CEO of Hyatt Pharmacies in the Milwaukee area with more than a dozen locations and a staff that speaks 22 languages and dialects. Hashim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me again.
Well, as you work with underserved and immigrant communities in the Milwaukee area, have you come up against challenges getting COVID vaccines to these groups?
Of course, when it comes to the underserved communities, they have their own challenges. They have their own everyday challenges. But when it comes to COVID vaccine, there's the transportation issue. There is the miscommunication that they are receiving through social media. And sometimes it is people that are homebound and they can't come to us. So all these issues combined were obstacles for them.
So how do you work with patients who are homebound or who can't get transportation to you?
We've started a new program where we do vaccination at home. So for the people who are homebound, we send a pharmacist or a nurse to their home to vaccinate them. And we have also worked with some churches who have their own, like for example, minivans or some or similar transportation tools to bring people to our pharmacies to get vaccinated.
What are some of the common misconceptions of the COVID vaccine that you've had to talk with your patients about?
The one that I heard very often is that that this vaccine can make the children or in the future not have babies. The fact that it has very severe side effects, that people are dying from it. I had a lady here, she said, "Oh, I know two people who died from the vaccine and I don't want to get vaccinated." She was literally crying because her job wants her to get vaccinated, but she was crying. Or everything on the social media, the fact that the government is over exaggerating this COVID, that this whole COVID is just really a myth. Everything. I mean, you whatever you see on the social media, we hear it in the pharmacies.
Hashim, you mentioned going into homes and pharmacists giving the vaccine. And the PrEP Act, under the powers of the federal government, now allows pharmacists and pharmacist technicians to administer childhood vaccinations and the COVID vaccine. What effect has that had on your profession?
It made it a lot easier for us to vaccinate people because for every pharmacist in any organization, a pharmacy organization, there's five or six technicians who are within the same organization. So when we had to vaccinate tens of thousands of people within our neighborhoods, having the technicians being able to vaccinate made things a lot easier. And also, I mean, we were able to utilize some of the resources, the unused resources. These technicians are well-trained, certified, and yet in the past they couldn't do this. They couldn't offer these services, but now they can, and that's beautiful. It's been really, it changed pharmacy significantly.
Do you think pharmacists and these pharmacy technicians should be able to administer all types of vaccines even after the pandemic?
I think that the pandemic really opened some beautiful doors, and these doors are going to be open and they're going to continue to be open because we have been able to prove the value of pharmacies, the value of community pharmacies. We are the most accessible healthcare professionals in the nation, and also having access to those great pharmacy technicians who are well-trained and it is really going to make things easier because vaccination, we've always had challenges with vaccination, flu vaccinations, pneumonia vaccinations, shingle vaccinations. We've always been under performing when it comes to vaccination percentages, national percentages. So I think that this is going to help us improve, not just when it comes to COVID vaccine, but with vaccinations in general.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Hashim Zabek, who's a pharmacist and CEO of Hyatt Pharmacies in the Milwaukee area, as we discuss the evolving role of community pharmacies that has been caused by the pandemic. You can join in. Have you relied on a community pharmacy in these times? Do you prefer an independent community pharmacy over larger retail ones? Do you get your meds in the mail? How has that worked out for you? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Hashim, Hyatt Pharmacy has distributed over 45,000 immunizations to Milwaukee residents. And although vaccines are free and paid for by the federal government, are there costs that we don't see, costs incurred to pharmacies for these vaccines?
Oh, of course. When it comes to extending the hours, when it comes to hiring more staff, when it comes to the paperwork and the billing, I mean, we've had to hire like tens of extra people in order to help with the whole process. There's a lot of things that happen behind the scene in order to make this whole operation happen. We had to cooperate with the school next door to our pharmacy in order to use their gym to do mass vaccination. So definitely there's a lot of additional costs. This was not the normal thing. COVID wasn't the normal thing for any of us, of course, but for us as a community pharmacy, it was a huge game changer. And we had to think out of the box and think of ideas and bring resources and cooperate with other nonprofit organizations to make this happen, because it definitely was a huge financial burden.
You mentioned staffing up, and the National Community Pharmacists Association, which represents more than 21,000 independent pharmacies nationwide, it surveyed its members a few months ago, found 80% are having difficulty filling open positions, mostly in the area of pharmacy technicians and frontline employees. Have you had workforce challenges in filling positions?
Oh, of course. With the sign-on bonuses that are offered by all these employers out there, we've had challenge, because we are a small organization. We don't have unlimited resources like some of the bigger organizations. So we've had issues with, especially at the very beginning, with the recruiting people. But when you tell, there are a lot of people who come on board with the right why they're joining Hyatt. We've had nurses who come to us, some retired nurses who came to us and said, you know what, I love this mission. I want to be part of this. I want to be part of helping the community fight COVID-19. We've had a lot of people who said, you know what, I know I can make a lot more money working for the larger organizations, but I want to come here and I want to be part of this beautiful mission. So, yes, we did have some challenges. At the same time, finding the right people with the right mission, with the right goal in life, has helped us recruit some people.
You know, as you talk about the mission of your pharmacy and deeply involved in the fabric of the community, how can community pharmacies in Wisconsin support incoming refugees in the state?
Refugees, that's also another need. Pharmacies and businesses in general, anytime there's a need, the most successful businesses are the ones that fill in and take care of that need. And with the Afghani refugees coming into Wisconsin, I heard in the news that some of them were having issues with food and clothing. We partnered with the Islamic Society of Milwaukee to help get free clothing and food for them. And we're working on a campaign with a clinic, a non-for-profit clinic next door to us called MCHC. They're going to work with us in order to vaccinate those people, not just for the COVID vaccine, but we're going to see what vaccination they need, whether it's a flu vaccination, pneumonia vaccination. We'll check and see. We'll work with the physicians at that clinic to determine what's needed and what can we afford to donate to them, and of course, through with the COVID vaccine, there's no need for donation because it's all covered by the government. But there are other vaccines that we might need to look for funds or grant money in order to get them covered.
We have pharmacist Hashim Zeybek, CEO of Hyatt Pharmacy in Milwaukee, as we discuss the role of independent pharmacies in the pandemic and as part of the community. Do you work for a community pharmacy? What is that experience like? Do you rely on one of your medications? Do you know your local pharmacist? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Hashim Zeybek here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the role of community pharmacies in fighting the pandemic here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In recent days, President Biden outlined a national COVID action plan, highlighting that vaccines have been made available at more than 80,000 locations nationwide, including pharmacies with walk-in appointments. Here's Biden referencing pharmacies in a speech Thursday on a broad plan to boost vaccination and testing among Americans.
We'll also expand free testing at 10,000 pharmacies around the country.
Have you been able to access COVID testing or the vaccine from your local pharmacy? 800-642-1234 to join in. Milwaukee pharmacist Hashim Zeybek stays with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's turn to testing, Hashim. Hyatt Pharmacy started providing COVID testing in May 2020. Have you seen changes in the demand for tests since Delta variant?
Oh, absolutely. There were right before Delta variant, we were testing maybe 15, 20 people a day. Yesterday, we tested 200. So there has been a significant increase. People are calling us and telling us, you know what, I've been in contact with somebody who is positive at work or somewhere else. And they're coming to us. A lot of people are coming to us because they're going back to their normal, semi-normal life, going back to work in the office. They're having social gatherings, and then some of those gatherings require PCR testing. Yesterday, I had somebody who said, "I'm going to a concert in Chicago, and they require me to have a test." And we have people traveling internationally. People traveling to Hawaii, people traveling to Puerto Rico, a lot of destinations require testing. So we've seen a significant increase in the number of tests. Some days, I mean, it's like I said, it went from 15 to 20 a day to almost 200 a day.
What is the cost of the test and the turnaround time?
If people decide to go with the free test that's funded by either the state or the federal government, it's always free. Mm-hmm. And the challenge with it is that you have to wait for a day or two to get the result. Now, that's a PCR test. There's also the antigen test. The antigen test sometimes we refer to it as a rapid test. Some people buy it for $25, the kit, and they test themselves at home. Or some people come to our clinic and they pay the $66 and get tested in the clinic or in the pharmacy. So they have multiple choices when it comes to the antigen test. The challenge with the antigen test is that it's not accepted by many destinations, and it's not accepted by some, for example, even some concerts, they require a PCR. But Summerfest, they accepted the antigen. So a lot of Summerfest people came to us for their antigen test.
And so how do people then get that proof that they have their antigen or PCR test and whether they're traveling or going to a concert?
We print the result for them here in the pharmacy.
Okay.
Again, we're working with different communities. There are people who... Some people who are tech savvy, they can generate their own report online and print it and they're done. But when you work with a lot of, for example, immigrant populations, when you work with some of the most underserved parts of Milwaukee, they don't know how to log in. They don't know how to download a PDF. So they come to us and they say, "I tested with you two days ago. Can you please check my result and then print it for me?" So we have the capability of doing that. And that's the beauty of being a community pharmacy. And we're not a super large organization, national organization. We're small enough where we know our community and we know what's needed and how to take care of them and how to change the system a little bit to make it easy for people to test. For example, a lot of people don't know how to register online for the test. We tell them, just come to us. We'll take care of you. If they don't speak English, we bring people who speak English and speak their language and help us register them. So that's the beauty of the small independent pharmacy.
We're talking with Hashim Zeybek, pharmacist and CEO of Hyatt Pharmacy in the Milwaukee area, as we look at how community pharmacies have changed in the pandemic and the resources there. Let's go to Jan now in Superior. Hi, Jan.
Hi there.
Yes, go ahead. Hi, we can hear you. Go ahead.
My comment is that pharmacists as a group and individually are almost always grossly underutilized. Everywhere I go, pharmacists offer free consultations, whether you buy your medications from them or not. You often have a doctorate-level individual highly trained in questions about medications and many of the side aspects of that are rarely overall consulted by the general public when this is offered as a free service to the public.
Jan, thank you for pointing that out. Hashim, Jan saying their pharmacists are underutilized for the vast amount of knowledge they have about medications.
And to be honest with you, I agree with him, with Jan 100%. And COVID came and it really showed the value of pharmacists. It showed that all these underutilized skills that are there, and they've been there for a long time, can be utilized. Now we're educators. We are going to the community. We're telling people why they should get vaccinated. When people walk to my pharmacy to just get tested because they are going on a flight or going to a concert, I tell them, how about if you get vaccinated? Because if you get vaccinated, you don't have to be tested for this or that. So I'm there educating them, trying to increase that percentage of vaccinated people in the community, trying to get to that 70 or 80% to get to the herd, immunity. We're not just dispensers. I mean, I know traditionally we've been viewed as dispensers of medications, but now, oh my gosh, 2020 came and pharmacists are doing a lot of things that we were not recognized for in the past. Yes, we did vaccination in the past. Yes, we did consultation in the past. But now we are on the news. We're making headlines. We are really changing the way people view pharmacists.
I want to ask you about the controversial medication ivermectin, which is typically used to treat diseases caused by parasitic worms. But some people, they think it's a COVID cure despite any scientific evidence to back that up. Have you received requests for ivermectin?
Oh, of course I have. I have received many requests. The challenge is there are some physicians who truly believe in it and they want to prescribe it. And then there are patients who said, you know what, my doctor wrote me this prescription. I want to get it. As a pharmacist, I have to use my professional judgment and explain to the patients the benefit and the risk of using this medication that's not completely FDA approved for this indication. And another challenge has been supply. Because of the demand for this medication, it's been almost impossible to get. All the wholesalers have been out of it recently.
There's deep concern in America about the high cost of prescription drugs and the burdens that families can face in trying to fill prescriptions. What can pharmacists do about this very complex problem?
Consultation. We get patients all the time who come to us and they say, I have diabetes and I'm on this medication and I can't afford them either because I'm uninsured or underinsured. Okay. And then we talk to them and see, okay, can we, instead of using this medication, can we talk to your doctor about switching you to this one, which might have different kind of side effects, but it's only 10% of the cost of the other medication. And a lot of times people say yes. And when it comes to blood pressure, you can treat blood pressure with a medication that costs $300 a month or $10 a month. And for people who are fully insured, a lot of times they don't see the real cost. But the people who are uninsured and underinsured, those are the ones who suffer the most. And those are the ones who really need to, again, talk to the pharmacist. This is a lot of times we just don't talk to the pharmacist. We just fill the prescription the way it is. But talk to the pharmacist.
The resource. Yeah. Hashim, Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Hashim Zabek, pharmacist and CEO of Hyatt Pharmacies in the Milwaukee area. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing COVID hospitalizations in the Fox Valley here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The latest numbers from the Wisconsin Hospital Association, there are more than 300 COVID patients in intensive care statewide, and the number of available ICU beds among the Fox Valley's 13 hospitals, that number is 8 beds. Do you work in a hospital or treat COVID patients? What can you say about the Delta variant and the wave of patients you're seeing? How is your healthcare team responding? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Emran Andrabi is CEO of ThetaCare, operating 7 hospitals in Appleton, Neenah, Berlin, Wapaka, Shawano, New London, and Wild Rose, and dozens of clinics. Dr. Andrabi, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning. Happy to be with you.
Well, I just cited the latest count from the Wisconsin Hospital Association, 18 free ICU beds in Northeast Wisconsin and the Fox Valley combined. How would you characterize the COVID situation in your hospitals?
I would say things are not in a good place overall, as you talked about the number of beds available. At ThetaCare this morning, I only have 2 ICU beds in total in the entire health system. And as you can imagine, that can become quite problematic, given that not only do we have to take care of patients who have COVID, but also have to take care, as a trauma center, patients with trauma, with cardiac issues, strokes, all the other things that people are experiencing in their lives alongside COVID. So that's one issue. And then the other issue is having the number of people that we need within our organizations to be able to take care of our communities. So it makes for a very difficult situation for folks who've been at the front lines doing this day in and day out in our health system and most other health systems as well for over 500 days straight now.
Mm. We're going to talk about staffing in just a moment, but I'm wondering if you have had to divert patients from your healthcare system. Have you had to turn away critically ill patients and send them to other areas of the state or hospitals?
Sadly and unfortunately, yes. And, you know, it breaks our heart every time we have to do that, because having been in our communities for over 110 years, we are here to take care of each and every person in our community. But the situation has required us to resort to doing that. And just to say that, you know, that's not an easy conversation as well, because all of our other healthcare organizations and partners across the state are facing similar issues. So it's on a case-by-case basis, having conversations and ensuring that we have a safe transfer for somebody who needs to be taken care of.
Dr. Andrabi, early on in the pandemic, of course, PPE was in short supply. Do you have enough of the protective equipment now, like N95 masks and other equipment?
The short answer is we do. And, you know, I think We actually do an inventory twice a day, every day. We have an incident command that's been ongoing for 500 plus days, as I said. We meet on a regular basis to take account of all the different aspects of things that we need, including supply chain and PPE, to ensure safety of our people and that of our patients. And you know, fortunately, we are well stocked from a PPE perspective. But you know, in many ways, this wave of the Delta virus is very different than what we were facing back in 2020. Our issues are not so much about the PPE and testing, as you remember it was in 2020. Mm-hmm. Our issues are very different this time.
How are they different? Give us that contrast.
Yeah, so, 2020, as I think about it, you know, we were in a pandemic, a virus that was unknown. We were learning every day, trying to figure out what was going on. We really didn't have a lot of tool in our toolbox. We just were learning about the whole idea of PPE. We were learning about the idea of ventilators and face shields and, you know, masks and N95s. If you remember, those were the things that we were all talking about.
It was all new jargon at the time for us outside the medical community.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I mean, we were looking in the region. We were looking across the country. We were looking across the globe to see if we could find those PPE things. And today's situation is very different. We understand the virus better. We have tools in our toolbox. And, you know, I believe that there are things that we can do proactively as a community or communities across the country to be able to impact the virus and not necessarily be beholden to the virus and let it proliferate and propagate and mutate so that it can continue to come back and infect us and really create significant impact from a, you know, not only COVID perspective, but from a hospitalization perspective. And you know, a lot of people have lost their lives in this process as well.
Vaccination, a key tool in the toolbox, I'm sure you'd agree. How has uptake been in the communities you serve?
So for us, I think, you know, first of all, I would really want to thank all of the community members who've stepped up and taken a vaccine, because it is one of the major tools we have in the toolbox today. So almost, 52% of the folks in the Fox Valley region have received at least one dose, and approximately, I would say, 50% or thereby have had about both of their doses. And one of the things that we see from a hospitalization perspective is that, 79% of the positive cases with Delta variant are amongst those who are not vaccinated. Approximately 80% of patients hospitalized are those that are not vaccinated. Hmm. And 83% of the people that are in our ICUs with COVID are those that are not vaccinated. So this tool is clearly something that differentiates, that enables us to better, sort of combat what we are dealing with here.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Imran Andrabi, who's CEO of ThetaCare. It's a not-for-profit community health system in northeastern and central Wisconsin. As we check in on the impact of COVID on this health system that serves an 18-county region, do you work in a hospital or in the healthcare system? What can you say about this most recent surge, and how are you doing? Join in 800-642-1234. Pat is joining us from Wauwatosa with a question. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks. I'd like to know if ThetaCare has required its employees to be vaccinated, thereby setting an example. And if so, when was that policy implemented? Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Dr. Andrabi.
Hi, Pat. Obviously, the health of our team members and those of our community members is first and foremost, and we have been closely watching what's happening with respect to the emergency use authorization with Pfizer and Moderna. And now that we have the conversation that's been going on at the level of the federal government with respect to hospitals and health systems that are receiving Medicare and Medicaid dollars, having to require vaccination. So up to this point, we have really been sort of having a lot of conversations with our team members, highly encouraging them to take their vaccines. We have about 74% of our team members that are vaccinated. And we are looking at all of these. So we haven't mandated the vaccine as of yet for the reasons that I just discussed. But, you know, this is an evolving conversation. And even as we speak today, we are having discussions around what next steps need to look like in light of
President Biden's mandate. What are your insights there as you watch President Biden give a mandate for organizations of 100 employees or more to mandate vaccination?
So, you know, I think, again, it's a touchy subject, and I understand and realize that, but I also understand and realize and see what, you know, we are all going through as communities and then as health systems and frontline care workers. And I think the right thing to do for everybody is to really consider taking the vaccine for a multitude of reasons. One, you want to protect yourself not only from the acute effects of COVID, but you also want to protect yourself from the what's called the long COVID, because we really don't know what the long implications of COVID are going to be for you. With the Delta virus, anybody who gets you know, infected can potentially infect another 10 to 12 people. So you are also potentially putting people at risk around you that are your loved ones and your coworkers and so on and so forth. So with all of that said, and you know, the obviously the death rates are going up, and a vast majority of people, as I said, that are being admitted to the hospitals are unvaccinated. You know, it behooves all of us to move in this direction. I realize that, you know, there are going to be some folks that are just not going to be eligible or won't be able to take the vaccine. But other than that, you know, really, all of us should move in the direction of taking the vaccine.
I could only imagine it would make you very nervous if your frontline healthcare team at bedside isn't fully vaccinated.
Yeah, it's you know, I'll tell you, there's been a lot of there are a lot of myths out there in terms of the vaccine. There are a lot of things, particularly for certain groups of people early on. For example, you know, younger females in the age group where they were thinking about, you know, pregnancy and those kinds of things. But as our conversations have evolved, as our learnings have evolved, you know, it has been shown over and over again that the vaccines are extremely safe from everything that we know at this time, including in certain subgroups that were concerned about certain issues. And with that said, you know, the right thing, again, is for all of us to move in that direction for exactly what I said before. Do it for yourself. Do it for your loved ones. Do it for your community.
We're talking with Dr. Imran Andrabi, CEO of ThetaCare, operating 7 hospitals, dozens of clinics in northeastern and central Wisconsin. Have you been hospitalized with COVID or a long hauler? Have you received care since the pandemic? What's been your experience battling the disease or helping a loved one recover? Be part of this, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Andrabi here on the Ideas Network. We're checking in with a healthcare system CEO in the Fox Valley as the Delta variant surges. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here's President Biden Thursday outlining a broad plan to boost vaccination rates, frustrated by the nation's slow progress.
The unvaccinated overcrowd our hospitals, are overrunning emergency rooms and intensive care units, leaving no room for someone with a heart attack or pancreatitis or cancer.
Do you work in a healthcare setting or at a hospital? What is capacity like now? What adjustments have you made in the surge? 800-642-1234. Dr. Imran Andrabi is ThetaCare's CEO with 7 hospitals in the northeastern and central part of our state. He's with us for about 9 more minutes. Dr. Andrabi, let's go into staffing a little bit further here. The shortages you see, ThetaCare sent out a call for nearly 200 nursing and nursing assistant staff on the Wisconsin Emergency Assistance Volunteer Registry. How is your health care system holding up with staffing?
So one of the things that I am most thankful for and concerned about are our team members, Kate. And, you know, like I said, you know, it's been nonstop 500 plus days. Our people have been on the front lines taking care of the people in our communities. And, you know, today the issue is not I don't have enough PPEs, I don't have enough beds, I don't have enough ventilators, I don't have enough people. And the people that we do have are tired and fatigued, and, you know, they've been going on and on and on. So with that said, as you also know, that there's a national shortage of workforce across the industry and across many industries, and that continues to create significant issues. And my heart goes out to all our nurses and techs and other folks that are in the work every day. So we've been, you know, trying to pivot, and we've been trying to innovate as best as we can and look at other methodologies by which we can provide those services to the people in our community by redeploying team members to critical areas within our organization. We are accepting new applications for RNs, CNAs, and multiple other roles within the organization to supplement our current folks. Trying to add additional people temporarily, as you talked about, through the Wisconsin Emergency Assistance Volunteer Registry. And then, you know, looking at, you know, what can we do to offer different types of sign-on bonuses and those kinds of things so that we can supplement our current staff so that they can take care of the people in our community. But I do want to say that the best thing to do is to stop the spread of the virus. Because that is what actually helps us in all aspects of this battle.
So as you look to pivot and innovate, as you say, have you also seen a lot of overtime among your staff? I mean, what are the hours like now on these floors?
We have. And, you know, and that's what I mean by people are tired and fatigued, because when you don't have the number of people that you need, then, you know, the people that are left behind are putting in additional time, additional energy and effort. And you know, that's just difficult to see, because, you know, kudos to all of those folks who are stepping up for the sake of their community. And we need to bring that relief for them, to them, so that they can continue to be healthy and well themselves before they can take care of everyone else.
When you bring in these temporary nurses or traveling nurses, how long can they stay with you? What are those times like?
So it really depends on the circumstance and the needs on the ground. And, you know, we have utilized agency nurses in the past. We've utilized travel nurses as well. So we are looking at all different venues where we may have the potential to bring some additional relief for the people that are taking care of patients.
Earlier this year, there was a study from the Chartis Center for Rural Health that found close to half of our country's rural hospitals were operating in a deficit. Hundreds are at risk of closing. Are your hospitals in a financially concerning position?
So, you know, I would have to say 2020 was a difficult year. 2021, we saw some relief early on in the year as COVID was sort of backing off. And now we find ourselves in the similar situation in our rural communities as well. Last night, every single bed in every rural community hospital that we have was taken. So, you know, it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on our rural communities, you know, in terms of being able to continue to live our mission. However, by being part of a system like ThetaCare, we continuously help each other out between hospitals in the Fox Valley and in our rural communities. If we have to move a patient appropriately, we will move a patient appropriately to a higher level of care. We have moved nurses from one hospital to another to be able to help each other out. So by virtue of that, you know, we've been very fortunate that we continue to support our rural communities as an entire system and not necessarily leave each hospital to fend for themselves. And that has enabled us to really live our mission across the entire 18-county region rather than, you know, doing it one by one by one.
We're talking with Dr. Imran Andrabi, CEO of a hospital system in Northeast Wisconsin, serving hundreds of thousands of patients annually. Let's go to Amy now in Galesville. Hi, Amy. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I hear Dr. Andrabi stating that they are doing sign-on bonuses to get new staff, which I think is wonderful. And I'm wondering what sort of incentives they're providing for existing staff to retain them.
Go ahead, Dr. Andrabi.
Amy, that's a great question. And, you know, just like the team that is looking at, you know, what can we do to bring staff in, you're absolutely right. Retaining our staff is absolutely critical for two reasons. One, because, you know, they're the ones who know the system. And two, they're the ones who've also helped us during this very difficult time. So we are also creating incentives for staff that are currently within ThetaCare in terms of creating what I would call referral bonuses. You're also looking at some other benefit design changes in the next couple of days that are going to be announced in terms of what we can do to give them some additional relief, both financially and otherwise, to be able to continue to retain our staff that have been in the foxhole, if you may, with us for a long period of time.
Amy, thank you for that call. I want to land here on masks, and many K-12 schools have returned to in-person instruction this year and have adopted different masking policies. As a physician, what would you say about wearing masks for these young people?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, as of this morning, when you look at data in children compared to June of this year, there's been a 240% increase in the number of cases in children under the age of 12, and a 24% increase in hospitalization. So I am a great proponent of let's use whatever tools we possibly can for our children because they don't have the ability to be vaccinated today. And so masking is the second best possible way for us to continue to safeguard them. And even for the adults, and even whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, I do believe that masking in addition to your vaccination is still an excellent way of keeping yourself safe and your community safe.
Dr. Andrabi, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Imran Andrabi is CEO of ThetaCare, a healthcare system with more than 7,000 employees in northeast and central Wisconsin, operating seven hospitals and dozens of clinics. Just ahead, we continue our Ask a Contractor series with advice about how to seal doors and windows properly to prevent heat from escaping your home. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.